The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. No sweat for England, who score buckets and win comfortably at home to Montenegro and away at a very welcoming Kosovo. Who has made the shirt their own, and just who will Southgate's men beat in the final of Euro 2020? Wales and the Republic can still get there. We'll look ahead to their games. Meanwhile, Stephen Davis hits a penalty into outer space to condemn Northern Ireland to the playoffs. Elsewhere, 99 goals for Ronaldo, one goal for San Marino and a win for Scotland. There are more attendance records for Bowes to purr over in the WSL. The curious case of Carl Fletcher at Leyton Orient and the goalkeeper who missed a penalty and dislodged a light fitting at the same time. All that plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, John Bruin, nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Max.
Hey, Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Did you miss me?
Yes, a bit.
Oh, thanks. That's quite touching.
Yeah, there you go.
Welcome back from your holiday as well, Jonathan Wilson.
Oh, thank you very much.
Did you have a nice time?
I had a lovely time, yeah.
All right, well, obviously we always throw out for questions on the pod, and thanks so much for all questions such as this. Paul, where were you on the 10th of March 2001? Robert, can any of you sweat? And Simon, can any of the panel remember the last time they went to a Pizza Express? John Bruin, you have been to that Pizza Express in Woking.
I have, not on the night in question.
Okay.
I was with my friends Laura, Jason and Becky. A very nice evening. Saw them quite recently.
And what did you have?
Probably sloppy Giuseppe or something along those lines. Dough balls too. Mm-hmm. And I think I've probably only been to Pizza Express once since then.
Anyway, we shall begin with England. Beat Kosovo 4-0 on Sunday after that 7-0 hammering of Montenegro on Thursday. That means they win the group. The highest scorers in qualification, they got 37 goals. The most England have scored in a qualification for a tournament since 1908. Full debut for Nick Pope, the midfielder of Oxlade-Chamberlain, Rice and Winks. Hudson-Odoi getting his second start with the national team, and Raheem Sterling was back in after being dropped for that game on Thursday. It wasn't a convincing 4-0, was it?
No, I mean, it was a slightly odd game in that neither side really had anything to play for. Kosovo clearly were at least as concerned about being welcoming and you know, sort of remembering what happened 20 years ago as they were about the match itself. So the game itself wasn't much of a spectacle, but, you know, England still scored four, and that's the thing this team does. And it's a thing that England teams haven't done for a long time, is that every time they play, you know, medium to low opposition, they absolutely smash them. Which, after the years of watching them struggle and sweat to get a 1-0 or 2-0, is quite refreshing.
I'm not allowed to talk about sweat anymore.
Oh, sorry. I'm so sorry.
Harry Winks scored the first, lovely first touch, played in a slightly different role to the Montenegro game. Has he made the shirt his own, or a shirt his own?
I don't think so. I think he's a good player, but I think that part of the field is a major area of concern for England. We haven't seen how good they are in this group on the back foot when they're chasing back towards their own goal, because they haven't really been tested. And I'm not sure Harry Winks is the man for the job. If Southgate seems determined to play one holding midfielder, I think I'd prefer to see Jordan Henderson in that position. But
no, God, no.
No?
No.
It's
no.
Not where Henderson plays, is it?
I know it's not where he plays, but I think he would be better than Winks, or else I think they need two. When England come up against very good opposition, as they will at some point, and that's invariably when they get knocked out of tournaments.
But isn't the problem that we try and play two pivots, and you can only use one pivot?
Well, you can use two, I just don't think England have two. And Henderson is much, much better in that number eight role, shuttling up and down. You know, if you think of that midfield three, you have one holder who appears to be now Winks or Rice.
Well, I don't think Rice should be even in the conversation. He's
Are you just bitter, Barry?
No. Not on the evidence of what I've seen. Any time he's in an England shirt, you're welcome to him, because we don't want him.
But they're the two contesting that shirt at the moment, and I can't see any other options at the moment. Then you have a more creative player, the number 10, be that Mank, be that Barkley. Then you have a shuttler who appears to be Henderson or Oxlade-Chamberlain. Now, maybe you decide you go slightly more defensive and play Henderson and Oxlade-Chamberlain, which I think is probably what I would err towards at the moment. But that, you know, that's how you shift the balance of the team, is that midfield three. But I don't know, people seem to have this idea that the midfield three has to be symmetrical, and I just don't think that's a modern... I don't think it's how midfield threes have been for 50 years.
Sorry, by symmetrical, you mean?
Well, you have either one holder and two more creative players, or two holders and one creative player. I think you have a sort of a, you have a triangle there where you have, yeah, the number five in Argentinian terms, the holder, the bloke who sits there, the pivot. Then you have the creator probably to the left, and then you have a shuttler who fills in the gaps. Yeah, just what right. Ozzie Ardiles did in the 78 World Cup.
Given how strong the front three of England is, could England be more like Liverpool in midfield and have a not very creative but very powerful?
Well, I think Liverpool do something pretty similar. That Wijnaldum is, I mean, obviously he's not a classic 10, but he is, I think, more creative than Henderson. But yeah, that's the model, definitely. I mean, Liverpool obviously do it through pressing extremely well. I think that's very hard to do with an international team when you don't have the players together for long enough really to drill that. But yeah, that is the basic model. And that's why I think Oxlade-Chamberlain could be really valuable. Him and Henderson giving you the lungs there.
And they have the fullbacks as well
to
replicate the Liverpool system. Obviously, they've got Trent, Alexander-Arnold, and then Chilwell. There isn't much between him and Andy Robertson as players. I think Chilwell's probably... He's probably a bit classier on the ball, whereas Robertson is total energy and drive, and he's also really good at crossing. I suppose the question is, if Gareth Southgate gets that month ahead of the tournament, I mean, there's only two matches in March, friendlies undecided who the opponents are going to be, that when he has to make that selection. In midfield, I tried to select a team last week, and it was pretty difficult because... At the time, I thought Declan Rice had more of a chance than I probably do now after watching the game last night.
But the problem is, who else is there?
No, I think Rice goes because also, if James Collins, his former teammate, was talking about this, he can drop into defence in emergency. Sometimes I think England manager have probably gone for too much versatility in a squad and it's caused an imbalance.
I suppose there are... You know, it's quite a long way until the Euros and things can happen in the season. So there are players now who aren't in the squad who sort of send a tweet of them with a Swiss ball or a bench press like Jesse Lingard did yesterday and I think Dele Alli did the day before. You know, and I suppose Eric Dier who...
Well, wait, who?
Well, exactly. Yeah. But they could, you know, things can change in this season, right?
Well, see, I think that's another problem for England. It's a good problem for you to have, I suppose. But in that Southgate doesn't seem to know... what his best team is, and that's because there's so much competition for quite a few of the places. You know, there's
how many players would you say have their place? They would be the three up front, really.
Mm-hmm. Even that's not clear though.
Sancho or Rashford?
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
I think Rashford has it at the moment.
I would agree with that. Yeah,
yeah.
But it's certainly not impossible that by in 6 months' time that could have flipped on its head.
I'd suggest that. Henderson is fairly nailed on to start the first game because he's Jordan Henderson and what he brings to the team.
Maguire is nailed on.
Yeah, although isn't having the most superlative.
Chilwell is probably nailed on.
Chilwell, yeah. And then the goalie because, okay, Nick Pope kept a clean sheet, but there isn't much competition there for Jordan Pickford and he's had a pretty ropey time at Everton.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another... you know, 20-odd players that could go into that squad.
Harry Kane scored last night, which meant he scored in every game, the first England player to score in every game of a qualifying campaign. In a sort of slowish season by his standards, he scored 20 in 21 games for club and country. His hat-trick on Thursday meant he overtook Alan Shearer, Nat Lofthouse and Tom Finney in the scoring charts and moved past Vivian Woodward to make him the highest scoring captain. 24 goals.
Great fashion designer.
That was in the 1908 campaign, Woodward, by the way, where England scored...
So that was a qualifier for the Olympics, was it?
Good question. But we did win 4-0 away at Bohemia.
So it would have been...
Tough place to go.
Yeah.
It would have been Great Britain, not England anyway. I'm sceptical of this stat. I can't believe it, because Britain hosted the Olympics in 1908, so Chile didn't have to qualify anyway.
It was on Sky Sports News this morning.
Well, it's almost certainly true.
England results in 1908, 3-1 win in Ireland, 7-1 win in Wales. They drew 1-1 in Scotland, two big wins in Austria, 6-1 and 11-1, 7-0 in Hungary and 4-0 in Bohemia.
So that's not qualifiers, that's just games played in the calendar year.
Did England only go to the home nations and Central Europe? Was that the...
There were no home games, which is strange.
Yeah.
Anyways...
Wembley hadn't been built.
It's a good point.
Wembley's still 15 years in the future.
People were like...
going up the Metropolitan line. Yeah.
But there's...
What was it? Just a building site.
They still had Wembley Way, didn't they? Yeah. Oh, I love seeing my team down Wembley Way, and then there was just a big hole.
It was just
there.
Way.
Anyway, the Harry Kane, the finish was third against... His third goal, rather, against Montenegro. It was a really clever finish, and there was quite a nice video of him watching it back with James Maddison, Tammy Abraham, and someone else on exercise bikes behind him, all saying how they would have missed the goal. And, you know, Tammy Abraham did get his first goal for England that day. But do we take Harry Kane for granted in this team?
Yes.
You think we
do? What do you mean we take him for granted?
As in we don't quite appreciate how good he is.
Oh, yeah, I think there's an element of that, absolutely. Well, he's a funny player because like, it's very hard. You know, he's just... Yeah, you look at Messi and he obviously has incredible technical skill. You look at Ronaldo and he's clearly got an astonishing physique. You look at Kane, it's quite hard to say what it is he does well, and yet he does everything well. Hmm. He's totally unostentatious about how he does stuff.
But deceptively good at every bit of football.
Yeah.
He's the best English centre-forward since Shearer, in the classic centre-forward sense. Rooney scored more goals, but he wasn't a centre-forward in that way. I think... Even if Kane gets to the Euros in the slightly desiccated state that he went to the World Cup in, which was, you know, injuries and how he was at the Nations... Was it the Nations League that thing was called?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yes.
That even in that state, he will start the game.
Well, at the World Cup, he was top scorer.
But he still was not quite Harry Kane.
Yeah, I know. And yet, despite that, he was still
but
top scorer.
I think the Harry Kane of this season is, even though he's still banging them in at a phenomenal rate, he's not as good as he was last season. His, you know, number of shots he takes is down, chances converted is down. A lot of the goals he scores, an awful lot of them are penalties. You know, you have to score them, obviously, but I don't think he is as good an athlete as he was, say, last year and the year before.
How much of that is down to Tottenham not playing with quite as much verve?
I can't stress enough, I'm not having a go at Harry Kane.
Why do you hate Harry Kane?
Highest goals per game rate for England since Jimmy Greaves.
So we should drop him just before the quarterfinal. And
Andy Carroll.
Jamie Vardy out of retirement.
Nice for Mason Mount to get his first goal in the Kosovo game. Off the pitch, you mentioned it, Jonathan, enormous welcome for England. Nick Ames has written a couple of really nice pieces about that in the paper. Strange to see England so welcomed. He tweeted yesterday, the stadium announcer read out the England team, just their first names, and let the Kosovo crowd finish their names. And it's something I actually really hate when Tannoy announcers do it. But he said, I've never seen that before. I don't think I'll ever see that again. And it was just strange, right?
Kosovo have found the cure for football hooliganism. Kill England fans with kindness. You know, they can't hijack a local square and cover it with crosses of St. George if it's already covered with crosses of St. George when they get there. You know, and there's boozy fans cheering for England. Oh, hold on, that's our job. That's what we came to do. So yeah, just if I've never seen. You know, most people are looking. Oh, England are coming to town. God, Kosovo welcomed them with open arms, and there wasn't a hint of trouble.
It's the way that these are household names in the way that I suppose Norman Wisdom was in Albania or something like that. That everyone loves these England players more than they're loved in England.
Tony Blair is a very common, a reasonably common first name in Kosovo for the same reason.
Tony Blair is one word.
Yeah,
it's one word.
Tony Blair.
The big story on Thursday off the pitch was the boos for Joe Gomez when he came on. Barney tweeted, very brief, the boos for Gomez. Every crowd contains a small section of dimwits. The vibe was on the whole very good. But apparently Gomez was very upset about it. Raheem Sterling took to Twitter to defend him. Is there anything more to say, Barry, apart from...
No.
Okay.
Were they booing because they wanted to see Raheem Sterling playing the game? Is that...
I guess so.
Or is that, it the tribalism of City fans?
But do City fans really go to Wembley on a, you know, for a...
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean...
They may well be the same fans who booed Raheem Sterling 18 months ago. I think it's hard to assign logic to it.
I worry about Joe Gomez because he's been a pretty unlucky player. A couple of nasty injuries. And then this, through no fault of his own, is a
And
player.
Then he bashed Kieran Trippier's knee, didn't he? That's why he was out of the game.
A bit accident prone.
But actually, if fit, would have a good, and playing regularly for Liverpool, which is a big if because Matip's playing very well.
Hugely talented player.
Hugely talented. And in an area where like Mings didn't have a brilliant game last night, you know, that there is that role still up for grabs.
And again, go back to the versatility. You know, Jurgen Klopp's trusted him to play fullback in a couple of big games. So another option there. I mean, you could potentially, I suppose, play him at right back and then maybe push Trent Alexander-Arnold into midfield and, you know, create more options by having him in the squad. I think Gomez, if he plays a bit more for Liverpool, would probably go because of that. We'll go to the Euros in England. Hmm. Yeah.
It's annoying it's not just in one country, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think the kids care? I mean, we're obviously all too old. We just like it how it used to be.
I actually don't mind this.
What a modern guy you are. Are you just trying to be hipster?
In this and nothing else.
Which outpost are you basing yourself in?
I'm doing Copenhagen for 2 days, Amsterdam for one, and Budapest for a fortnight, and then Munich for 3 days, and then...
Budapest for a fortnight?
Aye. I love Budapest.
Okay.
And also, I've said before...
That makes sense with you, yeah.
I don't particularly like watching hosts play in major tournaments, so given Hungary are unlikely to qualify... Budapest is a good place to be to avoid a host without having to go to Baku.
Well, look, we'll get on to Hungary and whether they qualify in a second. We'll do Ireland before we do Wales. Barry, you beat New Zealand in a friendly on Thursday night. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Do you have anything more to add about your game against Denmark? Or do you just want it to be over? You've written a piece about it.
Yeah, I sort of liken the whole Ireland-Denmark thing to Groundhog Day and how it's... dragged Christian Eriksen down. You know, he should be he's better than this.
Is Eriksen in the Bill Murray role?
But yeah, Eriksen's Bill Murray and Ireland are kind of Ned Ryerson. You know?
So bing! Only when Eriksen learns how to love will we be able to move on from this kind of...
I'm cautiously optimistic. Well, I'm not really. There's no reason I should be optimistic. So Ireland have played Denmark 5 times in basically just over 2 years. 4 draws, I think 3 of them scoreless. And Denmark battered us 5-1 in Dublin in the basically the most important of the 5 games, the second leg of the World Cup playoff. And we're playing them again tonight in Dublin. We have to win. They need a point. So I suspect it's going to be another attritional battle. By the law of averages, we have to beat them at some point. Hopefully it'll be this evening. But I'm not particularly optimistic.
I'm still coming to terms with the fact that Jonathan Wilson understood a cultural reference, to be honest, and actually had seen a film.
I watch films.
Oh, okay.
1993.
It's just music, is it?
No, I don't watch films at the minute because it's all your what do you call them? The comic book nonsense.
Your Avengers.
All right, Francis Ford.
Your Spider-Men.
Your Spider-Men.
Your Superman. Your Wonder Woman.
Damo says, will Shane Duffy's bullet header against the Danes be a last-minute winner for Big Mix Island or a sorry consolation?
He scored one last time, didn't he? Mm. I mean, he is the weapon of choice for Ireland. I actually went to the game 2 years ago before the other games, the utterly forgettable games in between. And he scored the opening goal, and I don't think I've heard a louder roar at a match than that. It was absolutely incredible. It was, unfortunately, it all came apart.
If Shane Duffy is your weapon of choice, is that an issue for a football team?
Well, it is if the weapon of choice is unstoppable, as he can be. I mean, I don't think in the Premier League, is there a better header of the ball than Shane Duffy? I suspect there can't be many better.
Good question.
Yeah, but with Ireland, though, there is something of the... There's something of the sort of kicking the can, which is a popular phrase these days, of Mick McCarthy's campaign as almost temporary Ireland manager, which is always that they've looked to this Ireland, to this Denmark game and said, well, if you'd offered me that at start of qualification campaign, I'd have taken it. And unfortunately...
Taken it or bitten your hand off?
Bitten your hand off.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
But then I predict that they're going into the playoff anyway, and that'll be, well, if you'd offer me that at the start. Everything is being put off. I fear, Barry, that the playoffs in March are what beckon.
I suspect you're probably right. Just actually as an aside, so that no one else would have to, I checked through all five games to see if anyone had played every single minute of every single one. Two players. Shane Duffy is one of them, and Darren Randolph is the other.
A weapon of choice, Jonathan. Song by who?
Not a clue.
Oh, come on, have a guess.
Bill Murray.
Okay, try a singer. Can you think of a singer? Well, not really a singer, is it?
No.
Chris Christopherson.
DJ, would you say DJ?
DJ slash producer.
Okay, yeah. DJ slash producers, Jonathan.
He's very famous.
He is, yeah.
50 Cent.
What era?
98, 99, that is 2000.
What's his name? Is married to Zoe Ball?
That's it.
Very
Fatboy
good.
Slim.
Yes.
Get in! Come on!
Actually, really, the funny is how much you really care. That'll be really excited about for the rest of your day, won't you? Anyway, look, that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll begin with Wales. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly live shows. Hey, Barry, next Wednesday, the Hubris Dome. Indigo at the O2, me, you, Jonathan Wilson, Ellis James coming as well. And there are still a tiny number of tickets available.
Yes, there are. And I'd very much like if people would buy them and come along. I should be leaving for my midlife crisis in India. Two days later. And I would like to go with fond memories of a full house.
I would like to say that I think it's not often we ask much of the listeners, and I love them dearly, but we provide this for you twice a week, and we really need some people to come to this.
I'm going for lunch the next day on the Suffolk coast.
Okay, and can people come with you? Can we like auction that off or something?
No. But yeah, I'd eat the food. The food will turn ashes in my mouth if I was a character in a poem by Milton, and if people don't turn up.
Right. It'd be great if you came. December the 20th, just a couple of tickets left. The good people of Leeds who are outperforming.
And that's the Friday night before Christmas. Yeah. I mean, they've really, you know,
they've stepped it up there. Yeah, good for them.
Real footballing city,
isn't it? Come on, South London.
It is a slightly smaller venue.
It's a slightly smaller city.
Is it a tenth of the size, the venue?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, it's an 11th of the size, isn't it?
Yeah. I'd be honest, I was really hoping you wouldn't sell any tickets for that one.
Well, listen, if somebody had said at the start of the season we'd half fill the O2, I'd have bitten your hand off, frankly.
The O1.
Me, Lars Wilson, and one more, 20th of December. Also, Dublin, 27th of January is sold out. 28th, there are still tickets. Liberty Hall, me, Barry, two more. Come along to that one, please. And also in admin, we've been nominated for the Football Supporters Association Awards for Podcast of the Year, which we've won 2 years in a row, or
I think we've won 6 out of 7. Or
oh God, the stress of it's not about winning; it's about not losing it, isn't it?
It's the Paris Saint-Germain
it is.
Experience. Yeah.
It is. So, you know, unlike PSG, you know, our funding is slightly nicer, isn't it? So, the website.
What funding? I've seen no evidence of funding.
What are you doing, Barry?
I'm just counting. I think I might have given us one more than we've actually won. Oh, I think we've won it every year apart from once when the Anfield rap won it.
Oh, okay. So anyway.
The Montpellier of this scenario.
So you can vote for us on the website, which I have tweeted out. But if you've got a pen handy, surveymonkey.co.uk/r/FSA-awards-2019. If anybody does that, I'll be so proud of you. And it'll also be on the, you know, the page, the podcast page. Go to it and vote for us and David Squires and our radio show and everything else The Guardian does. It's great. Wales won 2-0 in Azerbaijan. Almost a perfect game for Ryan Giggs. He left Aaron Ramsey on the bench. He was able to bring him on for Bale, allowing both of them to get some running in the legs and keeping them fresh for Hungary. Kiefer Moore scored again. Harry Wilson also on target after a great effort from Dan James, came off the post and bar. All that means a win tomorrow against Hungary qualifies them after Croatia came back from behind to beat Slovakia. Barry, would you like to give Ryan Giggs some credit?
Not especially. I mean, they beat Azerbaijan. They should beat Azerbaijan comfortably, and they did. They were missing a few key players, so I suppose he deserves some credit for replacing them with people who
are Welsh.
Didn't trip over their own feet. You know, I'm not sure how much credit he deserves, but it was a decent performance, and their celebrations afterwards were kind of muted because they needed Croatia to do them a favour against Slovakia, which Croatia went on to do, coming from behind to win 3-1. I'm just curious to know if Hungary are any good or not, because I don't know, but no, they're not.
No.
So, yeah, we...
I saw them in a friendly against Scotland about 18 months ago, and it's one of the... I'd say the only game bleaker than that I've ever been at was watching Hungary in a friendly beat Albania 1-0.
So Hungary are so bad they made Scotland look good?
I wouldn't go that far.
Right. But yeah, well, I mean, Wales, I don't think it should have come to this. They weren't in a particularly difficult group, and I think they should easily have finished second.
They've only beaten Azerbaijan twice in Slovakia, and lost in Croatia, and they lost in Hungary.
Because when you see the players they have at their disposal, they have some cracking players. I mean, Gareth Bale, now admittedly Aaron Ramsey has only played a few minutes in this entire campaign. Dan James, Harry Wilson's a good player, Connor Roberts. They've quality throughout the pitch, and they were missing a few of their decent players in that game against Azerbaijan, but Azerbaijan weren't up to much.
Kiefer Moore was man of the match.
I was really impressed with him, actually.
I really like him.
I saw him play for Barnsley last year. I think Sunderland beat Barnsley 4-2 last season, but the 4-2 makes it sound more comfortable than it actually was. Kiefer Moore was really, really good. I know it hasn't quite worked out for him yet at Wigan, but...
But is there more scope for a classic target man in international football?
Well, I think there's scope for it in all football, actually. I think it's... My prediction for the next 10 years is that... maybe not among the very elite, but among the teams just below the elite, target men will come back into fashion.
So Shane Duffy...
As a target man.
As a target man.
Well, the threat Shane Duffy poses is proof that teams can't really deal with big lads coming onto crosses.
But I also think top international defences are not that used to big target men.
Yeah, I don't think any defences... League One defences are used to it, but Premier League defences aren't. I mean, and also, if you've got a team who presses you really high, whack it long over the press. Yeah, that's how you beat City or Liverpool. You stick Kiefer Moore up front and belt it long to him.
There's a question. Who's the best... I suppose attacking header of the ball and defensive header of the ball, probably Shane Duffy both times, isn't it? But I mean,
Van Dijk's pretty good.
Van Dijk is excellent, yes. And Harry Maguire has the apparatus to be good at heading the ball.
A big flat forehead. Northern Ireland, they drew 0-0 on Saturday. Stephen Davis, he skied a penalty. Higher than Baggio? On the Baggio scale, was Stephen Davis' penalty?
Just going on memory alone, I'd say it wasn't anywhere near as high as Baggio's. But I have to take my hat off to Jasper Cillessen for some top-drawer shithousery in the build-up to the penalty, which I suspect he got in the penalty taker's heat, and that may have had a lot to do with the fact that he ended up ballooning it over the bar. It was a shame because Northern Ireland were excellent.
And they pushed the Netherlands twice, actually, because they were 1-0 up, weren't they, away from home, and they'd played it brilliant for 80 minutes.
Well, that's
and then
the sort of frustrating thing for them. I mean before the campaign began, you'd have said, well, if you win the games that aren't against Germany and Netherlands, you can't really expect any more than that. But actually, it wouldn't really have taken a huge amount of things to fall differently for them to take 4 points, even 6 points off the Netherlands. And if it had, they wouldn't be bothered with the playoff. So,
although, I mean,
well, as they've done, there must be just a slight sense of a missed opportunity.
That penalty decision was, I mean, I know I should know the law, and it's too lazy to say I just don't know anymore, but I don't know anymore.
I thought it was fair enough decision, but again, I'm like yourself, I don't really know.
It was a cross that came in and it sort of hit him, his hand was by his side, and it went off the post, and everyone thought, oh, Northern Ireland almost scored, and the players looked confused that it was a penalty and that the Dutch player was booked.
Well, yeah, and the booking fits. I mean, the same with the Ajax lad who was sent off against Chelsea.
Mm.
Okay, I can just about tolerate that we're giving penalties for that now. But the idea that's a booking. Ridiculous.
I don't think you should tolerate it being penalties, frankly.
Well, no, but like that's less bad than it being a book. I mean, the idea that any handball in the box is now a booking is ridiculous.
Mm. They'll have to go into the playoffs. Northern Ireland, Netherlands qualify for the first major tournament since Brazil 2014, where they came third after losing on penalties to Argentina. I had, you know, completely forgotten. I had to do some Googling of 2014.
I went to the game against Argentina in Sao Paulo.
So that was the World Cup where they. Well, yeah. That was the World Cup where they. They'd won a penalty shootout by bringing Tim Krul on late on, and they did it again. Oh, they didn't do it this time.
He'd run out of subs.
Ah, that's it.
I think that's right. Yeah, he'd run out of... that's just a game that did not happen until the penalty shootout. It just was played out.
Well, it was the night after the 7-1, wasn't it?
Yes.
Plus, they had the slightly odd situation. The Argentinian journalist had been killed in the car crash that morning,
right,
so the whole thing was really muted.
We went out for a lovely sushi after, Jonathan, if you recall.
We did, that's right, yeah.
There you go.
that's nice, nice gear change.
Yes.
how well can the Netherlands do?
Very well, I think. I mean, I don't know. I take the point that, England can't win the Euros because they lack a dominant figure in midfield or because they're defensively not good enough. And actually, that's not quite true. What people mean when they say that is there is a weakness there, which if they're going to, you know, they could be exposed. The truth is, there's probably 6 to 8 teams who have a decent chance of winning the Euros. England are one. I think the Netherlands are one. I think the Netherlands are a bit open at the back as well. If Ryan Babbel's your centre forward, for all I love Ryan Babbel, you think that maybe that's not quite as potent as Harry Kane or Cristiano Ronaldo, but or Antoine Griezmann.
The Dutch have always been a bit like this, where they have six, maybe five, six, seven really world-class players, and then a couple of other players that, I remember, like in the 1990 World Cup, they had Aberdeen's Hans Hillhouse amongst like a team of Frank Rijkaard, Van Basten, Hullit, Koeman.
Do they wake up? Hillhouse wakes up and think, "What am I doing here?"
Yeah, he played with that. So, I mean, a fine servant to all the clubs he played for, but
I guess that's what happens when your population is
very small,
15 million or whatever the Dutch is,
and you know, Memphis Depay. You know, he's obviously a different player to the one that we saw.
Did you just turn into a US Memphis Depay?
Memphis Depay is a very different player to the one we saw at Old Trafford. But again, I wouldn't say he's top of the range. Funny enough, I think that the forwards England have got are just about as good as anyone's, really.
I'd agree.
Yeah,
I'm just thinking now that time Wayne Rooney spoke about Depay turning up for a reserve game in a Bentley wearing a cowboy hat. Hi, I'm Memphis Depay.
Howdy, partner. Rootin' tootin', Memphis Depay.
Well, there's a man that ran out of skin to tattoo at the age of about 22, didn't he?
He's got none left. He's got his face,
chest, and back. Yeah.
Oh.
You could have some of mine.
I've got spare.
I'll lease out space.
If you come to the O2, you can have you can tattoo Barry's chest. I watched an amazing reality show called Just Tattoo of Us.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Amazing, where basically me and Barry would go into a tattoo parlour and design tattoos for each other, and we don't see them until they're unveiled. And I saw these two lads, and one of them had done a massive ball and chain on his mate's leg. Because he, you know, her indoors, you know, was in control of him these days, and he's not doing what he used to do. And he was so devastated. I mean, it's a mesmerizing TV program. The world needs Jonathan's face.
It's on MTV.
You never got that with Vivian Woodward, did you?
No, he didn't.
Right, Scotland. We do this in order of importance. So after Just Tattoo of Us, we go to Scotland's win on Saturday in Cyprus. They play Kazakhstan on Tuesday. These games are sort of pretty irrelevant. They're already out of contention for automatic qualification. They're already through to the playoffs. So these are, I guess, about... what, trying to build something towards next March? Saving face? Have they managed that?
I think they just need to get a feeling for winning games again. They've won 2 in a row, something I suspect they haven't. I haven't checked, but I suspect it's a very long time since they've won 2 games in a row. And even that's something. It's better than nothing. Get a bit of
pride back in the shirt, because I think Scotland have a lot of players who just can't be bothered, aren't that interested in playing for Scotland. So the more they win, the more people are going to want to play for them. I saw Ewan Murray tweeting that the Scottish FA were hoping to clear the weekend before the playoffs to give the team time to prepare, and that's not going to be feasible because of FITBA won't play itself without the internationals. So that seems a bit of a shame. I'm not sure how interested anyone in Scotland, from the FA to the league to the players,
it seems madness, right?
It seems insane. Yeah, I mean, obviously quite a few of them wouldn't be free anyway, but you know, it would give the players, just keep them fit, give them a chance to spend some time together, do a bit of training. But, yeah, it's not going to happen.
Scotland are in this position where if you'd have offered them a playoff before the...
they
would have been, they would have bitten your hand off. But actually, they already had been offered it before they played. That's something quite
And I think that if they've always been... It's always been in the back of their mind. I said before the group started, this is what's going to happen.
Well, I think as soon as they went 1-0 down at Kazakhstan, it was like, oh well, doesn't matter.
Well, if you'd have bitten her... it's
you can't say, if you'd have bitten her hand off, I'd have bitten your hand off.
Yeah, exactly.
And the thing is, they've always known, because they have the best record of the teams going through Path C, they've always known they're going to get the home draw in the semi-final against the weakest ranked other side from Path C.
It'll be a night of tears.
Looks like
at
being Bulgaria or Israel.
All right, that's how the playoffs will work. Also in that group, San Marino's record is now played 9, 1-0, drawn 0, lost 9, 4-1 against 46. They scored a goal, their first in 2 years, Filippo Berardi. First goal since the 4th of September 2017, when they put one past Azerbaijan in a 5-1 defeat. That is a run of 17 games without a goal, 1,623 minutes of football. So well done to San Marino. In Group B, Ukraine were already through. Portugal are now through, having won 2-0 on an absolutely terrible pitch in Luxembourg. It was great, wasn't it, John?
Ronaldo called it a potato field, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think Ronaldo fancied getting to 100 in that game. And the goal he scored, he only just scored it, really, because it was going over.
I mean, to be fair, Aaron Ramsey nicked one off him for Juve recently in exactly the same way. But it was definitely going in,
It was definitely going in. If you're one of his teammates, you really wouldn't want to be doing an Aaron Ramsey when his 100th goal is beckoning, do you?
Yes, go on. Lovely goal from Bruno Fernandes as well. Great first touch and great finish.
There's a guy that I thought didn't actually exist.
Bruno Fernandes?
Well, you know, he's that the guy that was rumoured to be joining every club in Europe. And, you know, these sort of transfer players that are just...
Well, William Carvalho of his... I mean, William Carvalho still seems to exist.
Yeah, and the guy that plays with West Ham now, Anderson, Felipe Anderson, he was until I actually saw him play, I didn't believe that he actually existed.
I saw him in the Nations League and thought he was amazing, like absolutely brilliant. I'd love to see him in the Premier League, Bruno Fernandes. In Group F, Spain and Sweden are through. Spain beat Malta 7-0. Santi Cazorla scoring his first goal since 2015, which is a beautiful thing. A fun 8 minutes for Spain. Pau Torres came on for his debut in the 61st minute, scored in the 62nd. Dani Olmo came on in the 66th minute and scored in the 69th. So well done to them. Sweden progressing after a 2-0 win in Romania. The game was stopped 5 minutes from the end after racist chanting was directed at Alexander Isak. The first step of the protocol was followed, and according to Isak's teammates, he was asked by the referee whether... if it happened again, he would like the teams to be taken off for another Tannoy announcement, the protocol step 2, but he preferred to stay on and finish the game so they could celebrate their qualification on the pitch with their fans. He was then booed every time he touched the ball. It's pretty depressing. Group D, during Israel-Poland, a pitch invader got onto the pitch, was chased by security, one of whom absolutely clattered into Polish right-back Thomas Kedziora, who required treatment before carrying on. I mean, the security man also must have needed some treatment. It was an absolutely fantastic challenge. Group H, both Turkey and France qualified. France with a 2-1 win over Moldova, who scored first, and Turkey with a goalless draw against Iceland. So that means Iceland take a playoff place. And last but not least, Finland joined Italy in qualifying from Group J. Their first major tournament they've ever qualified for. They beat Liechtenstein 3-0 on Friday night. Teemu Pukki getting his 8th and 9th goal in the qualifiers. That is out of 15 scored in total. by Finland. So, qualified in this break so far: Turkey, France, England, Czech Republic, Finland, Sweden, Croatia, Austria, the Netherlands, Germany, and Portugal. Just the groups containing Wales and the Republic of Ireland are yet to send their two teams through automatically. So we'll deal with those games on Thursday, and that'll do for part two. In part three, we'll start with the WSL. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. It was Women's Football Weekend this weekend in the WSL. Arsenal beat Spurs 2-0 in the first ever North London derby in the league at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. A record crowd, 38,262. Both goals came in the second half. Kim Little scoring from the edge of the box and Viviana Miedemar running onto a poor back pass to go around the keeper. Spurs kick Graham fluffed a one-on-one at 0-0 in the first half. Also 23,500 at Anfield for Liverpool's 1-0 defeat at the hands of Everton. Chelsea is still top with a 1-0 win over Manchester United. Man City stay second with a 5-0 win against West Ham. Georgia Stanway got two goals in 6 minutes in the first half and two yellow cards in 9 minutes in the second half. I do wonder if they... did they miss a trick by not having any games on the Saturday? It's a sort of women's football weekend was all on Sunday and you feel there was a sort of empty space on Saturday that they could have filled?
Sounds like it. I don't know if there's any rhyme or reason to them not having games on the Saturday, but...
Especially given that the England men's national team played on the Sunday. You thought that was a potential distraction. Mm-hmm.
In the Football League, only five games in League One because of international call-ups. So no game for leaders Ipswich Town. Wickham Wanderers are now level on points to them after a 2-0 win at Tranmere on Sunday. Akin Fenwell with one of the goals. Coventry a third after a 2-1 win over Rochdale. Liam Walsh scored a Messi-like goal for Cov. Go and find it. It's a fantastic, brilliant goal, isn't it? I mean, there's about 1,000 dragbacks in a mazy dribble. It was tremendous. League 2, Swindon are top after a 3-2 win at plucky underdog Salford. They go above Forest Green, who lost at home to Plymouth. Defeat also for fourth place Crewe, who were hammered 4-1 at Northampton. Richard Jolly's tweet of the weekend: 42 years after Elvis Presley died at 42, Carlisle sacked Stephen Presley. That was actually in midweek. They lost to Port Vale. And Rob Simpson says, Barry, can I rely on you to ask Max what the Cambridge score was against Walsall today? It's our first league win since September and we're shit. So a nice chance to get in an early blow on the pod.
What was the score between Walsall and Cambridge?
Well, after six defeats in a row, Walsall were two up on the mighty U's inside 10 minutes. Oh, okay. And won 2-1. Great times. John Bruin, a Mac Town update, please. What's happening there?
Yeah, Mac drew 0-0 with Mansfield at the weekend. I was up there last weekend for the FA Cup game with Kingstonian. Now, I did something that I regret a little bit, which is I broke the fans' boycott to actually attend the game. Why did I do that? Because at this point, I actually feared that that might be the last time I ever get to see them play. As it turned out, they played a combination of loan and youth players. And last week, they were the EFL opened an investigation into the fact that players have been paid late, which that's been going on quite a while. I have to question why the EFL have not been investigating until now. There is a bid that's gone in from a guy called Joe Seeley, who is the son of Les Seeley, Mad Les Seeley, used to play for Manchester United, the late
Angry Les.
Yes, yes. And funny enough, when I was in Macclesfield last week, I took a morning constitutional walk and Joe Seeley was down at the ground. So he has been around. He met fans before the game on Saturday. I know that Macclesfield fans are very worried that the club is going to go in the same way that's happened with Bury. The one thing is, so far we don't think that those mortgages on car parks and all the rest of it that were when you the thing is, Joe Seeley actually did put in a bid for Bury, and if you peeled under the layers there, the finances were so complicated that there was no real way out of it. Mac, it seems a little less complicated. The question is whether Joe Seeley has the money and whether Amar wants to sell the club. The overriding opinion amongst, I would say, 99% of Macclesfield fans is that they want a new owner to the club.
Someone who did talk to TalkSport was Leighton Orient chairman Nigel Travis, with some interesting quotes on sacking Carl Fletcher after 29 days in charge. We screwed up, he said. It's gone spectacularly wrong, and we recognise that. We did a very thorough search. Carl came in, and we thought he was going to be the perfect person. He has a very strong technical background, great coaching pedigree, a very strong history at Bournemouth, a club we really admire, and previous managerial experience in League Two. But what happened, in short, was the fit wasn't right. The cultural fit just wasn't right. It's kind of embarrassing for me, having written a book on culture, that I failed to see it. But we don't blame him, we blame ourselves. So a kind of, it's not you, it's me, dumping of Carl Fletcher.
It's a novel one.
Hmm.
Do you think we'll see more of that from Ed Woodward when Ollie gets...
Just the culture, to say, you know, it's culturally...
We can't really say Ollie doesn't understand the culture of Manchester United, but it's a new approach, isn't it?
It is. It's totally our fault. But obviously, you can't sack the rest of the club, can you? It's like you can't sack all the players. You can't sack the whole club.
Where did Fletcher go to Leighton Orient from? Was he still working for Bournemouth?
He was the lone player manager at Bournemouth. And I remember he told us a lot about what that was. I confess, it was too long ago to remember what it was, but it was interesting at the time.
It'll be an athletic feature within a week.
They'll track him down.
That's the same job that I think, is it Paulo Ferreira does that at Chelsea or has done it?
Oh, where it's quite a big job at Chelsea.
That's a fair undertaking, actually, yeah. At Chelsea. Maybe not so big at Bournemouth.
Probably.
Chelsea is managing more people than the NHS and the Indian postal system.
Thierry Henry has been appointed the manager of Montreal Impact until the end of 2021, with an option for 2022 as well. His first job since he left Monaco, having won 4 out of 20 games. Returning to MLS after finishing his player career with New York Red Bulls in 2014. Good luck to Thierry Henry. Barry.
Today is the 10th anniversary of Thierry Henry's famous handball that denied the Republic of Ireland a place in the 2010 World Cup.
Ryan says, where on the Pressman scale does the Nuneaton goalkeeper's penalty sit? Did he over Pressman? 0-0 in the 60th minute. Nuneaton were playing Stratford Town in the Southern Premier Central, and they let their goalkeeper, Tony Breeden, take a penalty, and he larruped it over the bar, and it hit a light that was on, and the light stayed on but fell off the wall.
And it was a big light.
It was a big long light, wasn't it?
Yes.
Fluorescent tube.
I'm not sure that's the technical term, but yes, it was quite a large light.
Big long light. It was, you're right, Wilson, a fluorescent tube.
It's the manic laughter in the background on that clip that really makes it as well.
It's so, so good, isn't it? I mean, I don't know why they let him go up to take it, no. But it was a bit, you know, we. I'm sure I may have told this anecdote before. It's happened. Lionel Perez was our goalkeeper. We blew all our wages on Lionel Perez.
Sunderland legend.
You know, the man chipped by Cantona for that lovely goal.
And the only man to let in a goal from Richard Rufus. Mm,
he
chose to do it 5 minutes from time at Wembley.
Yeah.
He spent a lot of the time on the halfway line for Cambridge. It was lobbed twice a game, but he was a cult hero. Anyway, we were already relegated in a game and we got a penalty. So we were just screaming for him to take it. Our manager, John Taylor, said, oh, go on, you can take it. And he absolutely twatted it and broke the opposition goalkeeper's ankle, but missed. but Tony Breeden's is up there with missed penalties by goalkeepers.
There was Bernabe Ferreira, who was sort of the first like massive Argentinian striker, sort of the first sort of celebrity of Argentinian football in the 30s, had a famously powerful shot. And a newspaper offered a cash prize for first goalkeeper to save a penalty from him. And I can't remember the name of the keeper who saved it, but he broke both wrists in saving it, but got his cash prize from the newspaper.
That's amazing.
And more on that in my book, Angels with Dirty Faces, available for Christmas.
Right, there are... Well, now you're giving us a punchline. We don't need to read it, do we? There are FA Cup first-round replays on Tuesday and Wednesday this week, by the way. Has anyone seen the scenes in Eswatini? Have you seen these?
The rainstorm.
Massive. Mm. Sadio Mane was somewhere down there, running away from a storm. Sean says, did this man change the course of the match between Eswatini and Senegal? 0-0 before a storm rolled in during the second half. He went out to the Eswatini goal during the storm and looked like he sort of prayed to the goalpost. The match resumed and bam, Senegal win 4-1. Sad news about Dominic Matteo, but hopefully more positive over the weekend. The former Liverpool and Leeds defenders had surgery on a brain tumour. There was a statement from Liverpool saying he had the operation on Monday and has come out of intensive care, saying the thoughts of everyone at the club are with Dom. His family and friends will be offering our support to them throughout this difficult time. A tweet from yesterday from a guy called Simon Ross, who is a great friend of his, just said, update on Dominic Mateo. Just had a FaceTime call from him. He was on incredible form, chatting, talking football, joking, and very positive, and immensely grateful to all the hospital staff at the LGI. Amazing recovery. So we wish Dominic well. Some questions to finish. Sam, any thoughts on the Libertadores final next weekend, Wilson?
I think the two very, very good managers. I think the two pretty good teams. I think in terms of quality, this might be the best Libertadores final for a while. Flamengo managed by former Benfica coach Jorge Jesus, who are top.
Good hair.
Yeah, well, they're top of the league in Brazil and playing really good football. Actually, second, Santos, who are managed by Jorge Sampaoli. So two foreigners leading the top two teams in Brazil, which I think perhaps suggests the new outward-looking mentality in Brazilian football after the very insular years of Dunga and Scolari on loop. And River, yeah, they've won two Libertadores already under Marcelo Gallardo, who I think is one of the brightest young managers out there. He's only, 42, 43?
Yes.
And if it weren't for the insane politics of the Argentine Football Association and how in hock they are to Boca, I think he may well already be Argentina coach, and he certainly should be Argentina coach. And if he were to win it, he would become, I think, only the third coach to win three or more Libertadores.
Another question for you, Jonathan, from Matty. What is your take on the Wilson scenario, please, which came out in Liverpool City with the ball hitting Trent's hand and then...
I didn't see it till this Saturday because I was in the desert at the time. Mm. So I got very excited because it did sound, from the text stuff I read, it was going to be very much the Wilson scenario, but it turns out really not to be, because I think it's just a handball.
Were you on a horse with no name? Because I know you were on a horse during your
holiday. I was on three different horses. They all had names. There was Chico Moro, there was Fierro, and I can't remember the third one. The third one clearly kind of resented me at every step of the way, kind of clearly recognised me for the kind of neophyte that I am on a horse.
There was great excitement in the office when it became apparent or common knowledge that you were riding horses. No one could quite picture the scenario.
I'd only ridden a horse once before, which was in Russia in 1992 or 3, I think. And that was just trotting around like a little track. This was like proper kind of galloping. Across the step. It wasn't galloping.
Canter?
It was mild trotting at best.
Really? So you didn't even break into a canter?
Didn't break into a canter, no.
That's a poor effort.
Which of the two would you compare yourself to? Ruby Walsh or Tony McCoy? Ruby's more sort of easing through.
Very stylish.
And AP was making sure they knew he was there. Let's put it that way.
I found
it. Let him know that you're there early.
I mean, I didn't really do much of that. I kind of, it felt a bit...
They were in control.
Yes.
Well, look, that'll do for today. Thank you so much for your time, Jonathan.
Thank you. And
welcome back. Thank you, John.
Cheers, Max.
Thank you, Barry.
You're welcome.
We will be back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.